Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. My name's Eric, and with me I have my ally detachment, Ian Raymond.
Hello, everyone.
And tonight, with the celebration of the new Death Guard Codex, we wanted to get one of the foremost experts on the Death Guard Codex. Unfortunately, they weren't available this evening, so we brought Don back for another episode. Don, thanks for coming.
Hey.
Now, Don has been a longtime Death Guard fan and has had his hands on the Pox-filled Codex for quite some time. He's actually got quite a few Caractus games in, and each of his battle reports has forced me to huddle under my desk at work in a fetal position in fear. So we'll be going over that in great detail, what keeps me up at night, which is the new Death Guard Codex. But before we get into that, we're going to get into our usual rundown of the competitive events from last weekend. And then later on, we'll go over the ITC Top 10, as well as upcoming tournaments for the following week. You guys ready to get started?
Ready.
All right. Sure thing. So we had four GT-level events last weekend from a wide range of areas. There's a couple from Australia that I'm not including. So whenever we say we're an international podcast, we're about as international as IHOP right now. So first of all, thank you guys from Australia. Hope you had a good time. But we're short on time, so we're going to keep it to North America. But we are going to span the stretches of our North American continent from sea to shining sea, if I can get that out. We're going to start with the Sidewinder GT in the heart of Texas. First of all, I got to give a personal apology back to the TL. Paul Fullis had invited me personally to come to the event. I was triple loaded with family events this weekend, so I was not able to attend, but it sounded like it was a great event. So we'll start with the top eight from that particular event. In eighth place was John Bowman with Alderi. He went 3-2. In seventh place, Red Powell with Chaos Space Marines, also 3-2. In sixth place, Scott Freeman. Hey, he's one of our local guys. What's he doing in Texas? And he came with a Astartes Custodes army and went 3-2 in that particular tournament. Curious to see what he has in that list. Knowing Scott's going to be interesting. In sixth place, Jason Bird with Cadian Shock Troops. He went 3-1-1. The TO himself, Paul Fullis with Imperial Knights, also went 3-1-1. Will Albiez with Tau Empire went 4-1. Vincent Arroyo with Chaos Space Marines went 4-1. And undefeated, but not 5-0, at 4 wins and a tie, with Jonathan Camacho with his second straight GT win with Gene Steeler Colt. So the Cowboys from Hell once again took the top three spots at their home event. What do you guys think of the meta in that particular group?
Sounds nice and diverse down there, actually. Because I don't know, were there any factions that got repeated?
The only thing I can see were two Chaos Space Marines.
Mm. And yeah, aside from the Imperial Soup of the Custodes, yeah, everything else is pretty much all over the place. But I know Gene Steeler Colt are a very, very good army. Yeah, I know those guys are able to shred through most of the screens, like conscripts, things like that. And they're everywhere.
What something I noticed about Jonathan Camacho's list is he had two of the patriarchs, which I didn't realize until I took a quick look. They are no longer limited to one per detachment.
Ooh, I did not know that either. That's true. The old Gene Steeler Codex was much more. You know, I don't think I ever saw anybody play a pure Codex from that. They always took the formations. So I think that's what I assumed. That's had you had you could only play that army that one way. So without formations, there's probably a lot more options that we didn't realize. Interesting.
Also, just wanted to take a minute. Did anybody notice the team name that Scott Freeman was playing in Aspartan?
Yes, and we're trying to stay a family-friendly podcast.
I just wanted to ask if anybody else noticed. That's all I'm asking.
We didn't notice that. So, real interesting there. So curious to see if we'll see Scott as well. His one of his teammates of the team that shall not be named, Darren Schwartzman, actually came in ninth with Tyranids. So we're curious to see if we'll see them this weekend at our own tournament, which we'll get into details later. All right, ready for the next event?
What's next?
One of the coolest names of a tournament in quite some time, the Harvester of Souls event. This is up in the Pacific Northwest. I'll go over the top eight there as well. In eighth place, Josh Bagwell. I wonder if he's related to the Astros first baseman. But anyway, he was also playing Gene Steeler Colt. He went 4-1. Farzad Mendipur with Alderi came in 4-1. Joel Talley with Codas Astartes came in 4-1 in 7th place. Matt Johansson, also with Eldari, came in 6th place with going 4-1. Mason Moore with Orcs. That's right, Orcs cracked the top 5 with 4-1. Stephen Hitch, I think that's how I pronounce it right, with the Chaos Soup going 4-0-1, so undefeated, but still had a tie in there. Josh Johnson, we talked about him, I think it was a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. He pulled it off again, came in 2nd for the 2nd time in a row at a GT event with Harlequins. 4 wins, 1 tie. And undefeated at 5-0, Colin Sherman, who took the event with Imperial Guard going 5-0. So thoughts with that group of top 8?
We had, what, 2 Eldari lists, Astro Militarum. It's probably Conscript Spam.
Probably. And we talked about Imperial Guard being super strong. It's probably the same mix there. We'll get a hold of the list as soon as we can. But I think it's interesting that, you know, 2 weeks ago, everybody was so excited to hear that Craft World Eldar Codex was on its way because Eldar were underpowered. And we've got 2 GTs in a row where Eldar made the top 8. Now, granted, we're not seeing them in mass numbers like we did at the end of 7th, but they're starting to sneak in. So are players starting to figure out how to play Eldar?
They might be. It's just a different army than it used to be. It's not bad. It's just different. That's all that it is.
Also notice we got 2 Gene Stealer Colts and 2 GTs that are miles apart. So interesting. Again, shows you the strength of the Codex. We know Jonathan's a really strong player. I don't know much about Josh. Look forward to meeting him and talking with him about his list. But interesting. So you got 2 Gene Stealer Colt armies that went combined 8-1-1 in 2 tournaments. So, interesting. All right, we're going to go up to the Great White North, to Canada for the next one. This was Attack X in Canada. Interesting event here. So, the top 8 from this group in 8th place. Hope I pronounced your name right. It is Takawana. He was playing Ultramarines, going 4-1. In 7th place, one of my arch nemesis from last season, JT McDowell with Drukhari, came in 4-1. I have never met this gentleman, but I was chasing him all year for best in faction. My hat goes off to him. He kicked my butt at LVO. In 8th place, Sean Porter with Imperial Guard, also going 4-1. 7th place, Alex McDougall with Gene Stealer Cult, also 4-1. 6th place, Nick Claude, I hope I pronounced your name there, with Alpha Legion going 4-1. Rupert Campbell with Alderi, also going 4-1. 2nd place, Matthew Tones with Imperial Guard going 5-0, but didn't have enough battle points to catch up with Jeff Everett with Orcs going 5-0. So the Great White North was conquered by the Greenskins.
Always happy to see Orcs do well. But yeah, right there, it was like he maxed out all his gains except for one, and that one, he was like he might have tied one of the missions. But other than that, he got maxed. So that's very, very promising to see Orcs do something like that.
No, it's really good to see that. So we got Orcs winning a GT here in Canada, and then over in the Pacific Northwest, we have Orcs coming in 4th place. So again, 2 Orc players so far out of the 3 GTs, 9-1. So it's good to see that good mixture.
And that wasn't a small GT either. It was one shot of being a major. It was 57 players.
And it's a pretty competitive group, from what I understand from hearing a few other podcasts, that that particular area of Canada is pretty much where one of the hubs of competitive play. So all the big names did show up for that particular event. So I did recognize several of the names while going through the scores for tonight's episode. I do have one more event. We're going to go even further north, all the way up to Alaska. I didn't even know they played 40K in Alaska. But there was actually a GT level event called Battlezone Ursa. And the top 8 from that particular event, we start number 8, Colin Wingo with Chaos Demons going 3-2. Why do they call it Chaos Demons? Is there an Imperial Demon list? I've never heard of that. But anyway.
They call them Grey Knights.
Good point.
Well, wasn't there at one point in time there was another demon that wasn't considered part of the Chaos? Or was he?
There was a 5th like Chaos God. And he was kind of like, his job was to kind of mess with the other 4 to upset the balance, whatever day of the week it was. His name, something with an M. I can't remember what his name was. And yeah, and he got written out. We haven't heard of him since second edition.
Yeah, they call him the Emperor now. I kid.
Back to this. Seventh place, Danny McDevitt with Tyranids going 3-1-1. Eighth place, Mark Winter with Space Wolves. Seems appropriate. So, I mean, but the last name Winter is playing Space Wolves. Going 3-1-1. In sixth place, yes, Pablo Martinez. That Pablo Martinez from Chapter Tactics brought his Imperial Soup list to the far north and went 4-1. Milo Sumalong with Tau Empire went 4-1, coming in 4th place. 3rd place, Wallace O'Donnell with Imperial Guard, also 4-1. Tim, oh boy, Hubashek with Zeech Demons went 4-1. And then in 1st place, going 5-0, without his Codex in hand, Robert Porter with Admech was able to take Battlezoned Ursa.
I know, I'm looking forward to seeing how Admech does with the new Codex. Everything looks pretty good as far as I've seen. A couple things aren't too amazing, but a lot of it's looking very, very powerful.
I really like.
I'm sure that he'll do better.
Yeah, I really like the Forge World traits. So it's more than just a paint scheme. They actually mean something on the table. I didn't realize that Canticles were random this edition.
So what they are is you either pick your Canticles, but you cannot pick the same one twice, or you randomize it, and it can pick the same one over and over again if it rolls it.
The Mars thing just gives you an incentive to do it randomly, because if you do it randomly, you can take two.
I see. I did not realize that. Very interesting. Yeah, so another codex to add to the power creep that is 8th edition right now. But looking at our top events from this past weekend, like I said, Aldari makes an appearance in the top 8. 3 out of the 4 tournaments. We got 2 strong appearances by Gene Stealer Cult. Orcs, 2 strong appearances. Not seeing as much domination from Space Marines and the Chaos Space Marines at this particular point. Still seeing a lot of Imperial Guard. So, meta still in shift at this point, and when we get to our main discussion point with Death Guard, we'll see how they will change the meta. Now we're back with the main discussion this week. As many of you are well aware, that the Death Guard are back. Well, actually back. This is the first time they've ever had their own standalone codex, and it was just released this particular weekend. So one of our more avid Death Guard players, Don Husen, who still... Where are you ranked at this point in the ITC? I forgot to look this morning.
I don't know. Probably somewhere in the low 50s, I think. I still need to get a major in there to knock myself way up.
Okay. You've got a GT this weekend, which we'll get into in greater length a little bit later in the show. But Death Guard's out, so we've been talking a lot about how much the codexes or codices are affecting overall gameplay and the addition of stratagems. But so far, what we've seen in codexes so far has been a kind of a redo of points. Here's your stratagems, here's your relics, here's your warlord traits. Have fun with your old models. Several new models, several new units. It feels like an old codex. Like what we used to look forward to from a Codex release. So, Don, what can we expect from Death Guard?
All right. So, Death Guard, the general idea of Death Guard is that they are a fairly slow army that is very tough to get rid of, that will beat you down to a pulp over the course of a great amount of time. You will be seeing things like Mortarion out on the field. So I'm pretty sure he'll be a staple for at least a little while until people get tired of him. Since he only works in a few builds really well. Other ones, he just doesn't do anything. There's also a few units that are absolutely gorgeous looking that don't do a whole lot, but there's also the vast majority of the book is amazing. I know I've played several games with the new book, and all of them have just been absolutely amazing. Most of them caught my opponents completely off guard, especially with the new vehicles that the Death Guard have picked up, such as the Plague Crawler, the Mephitic Blight Hauler. Those things are just absolutely amazing, especially with Mortarion around them to, for lack of a better term, babysit them. He's definitely not like Magnus is, where Magnus is completely self-reliant. Mortarion is actually a team player, as weird as it sounds.
So is he more like Gilliman, where you surround him with Razorbacks and everybody gets better?
He is basically a hybrid of Magnus and Gilliman, since Gilliman is definitely a pure buff bot. You don't want him out front, otherwise he will die almost instantly. or I shouldn't say that, but in most cases, he will die very fast. Mortarion can usually take a few hits. He absolutely requires that he has the, I believe it's Miasma Pestilence power on him at all times. It's minus one to hit in both shooting and melee. If you don't do that, he will die very fast to most shooting armies and psychic armies. Generally speaking, you don't care about that, but yeah, he needs to have defenses up on himself.
You mentioned some of the units that are real standouts, especially the new models, so let's focus on those. I mentioned the Blighthauler, and I can't remember the other tank. What's their role, and how do you think they'll affect the meta?
All right. So the one in particular I think is absolutely amazing, primarily because it can be used in any of the Death Guard builds, whether it's vehicle-heavy, troop-heavy, heck, even Poxwalker-heavy. They'll actually have a save. Or, you know, any kind of soup that you want, really, but they work almost everything in Death Guard Codex really well with the Death Guard Codex, and they play okay with everyone else. But the Mephitic Blighthauler is the little tri-wheeled heavy cannon tank, more or less, that it actually moves fairly fast, but it has disgusting resilient. It is a demon. All the new vehicles are demons, so they have the 5 Bimble save, and they're also demons of Nurgle that have demonically resilient. But yeah, this little thing here, it's Blitz Skill 4, Weapon Skill 4, absolutely beautiful. It has three different guns and one melee weapon. The guns are a 12-inch Assault 3, Strength 6, AP minus 1, 1 damage weapon. Oh yeah, and it's Plague Weapon. Plague weapons are beautiful. They like reroll failed to wounds, especially when you're nearby Mortarion. Then it has a missile launcher, multi-melta, and a something called Gnashing Moth. It's a close combat weapon. It's basically a power axe with the plague weapon ability on it. But the best part about it is it gives all Death Guard infantry within 7 inches, that are completely within 7 inches of at least one of these little Blight Haulers, cover. So that's where you're able to get your Plague Marines down to a 2-up armor save. Your Terminators will basically be ignoring AP1. And then there's other things too, like the tri-lobe ability, which is basically so long as you have at least 3 of those models in squad, and yes, they are squadrons of vehicles, you get to add one to hit. So those things that are hitting on 4s go down to hitting on 3s, and they're not bad at all at that point. Then they also have another ability. Like I said, they have the multi-meltas and missile launchers, which are both heavy weapons. They have the ability that they don't suffer any penalty to moving and firing when shooting heavy weapons. So you can move those guys all 10 inches that they move, and just unload across the board at anything. And then also, when you attempt to hit them in close combat, you have to subtract one because they apparently stink really bad. It's called Foul Stench.
Oh, wonderful.
But yeah, I can definitely see that being at least 3 in one squad in every army. It's just, they're so good. Primarily as a buff unit. One of the other things I was looking at, which in my opinion, is the best tank for its points in the game now, is the Plague Crawler. It basically has the same stat line as a Lehman Russ battle tank, with basically a plague weapon version of a battle cannon that does not require line of sight to shoot it. It has two either plague spitters on the side, which are the same weapons that you've seen Blood Drones have. They're the poison strength user, AP1, automatic hit flamers that are 9 inches. And this thing's also higher strength than the Blight Drone, so that's that hitting that much harder. Or you can switch it out for 2 strength 8. They're basically long-range melta guns without the melta roll. And then they also have the ability to either switch out between a 4-shot heavy bolter or a 3-shot strength 6 minus 2 AP 1 damage gun as well. And that is also a demon engine that has demonic, and it's just so tough to get rid of those things. Especially when you start comboing it into other things like demons. Like Epidemus. But I've recently had really good success with it. I've torn apart a Magnus list with Titans. And I had lost, I think, Mortarion and a Lord of Change, Lord of Contagion in the process. They're so good, they tear apart everything to look at.
You mentioned you'd be able to take on some of the heavier stuff, but it's interesting when we were talking before the show, these particular units have a mix. They have a flamer, so it's hard to assault them. They've got the shooty effect for hordes, as well as a strength 8 weapon for at distance. Kind of a all-comers tank, from what you're saying.
Yep, and by all means, even though it's only BS4. If you move it, it becomes BS5 for that tank in particular. It still shoots so many shots, and like the flamers, the auto hit. It's definitely a tank that you do want to actually run up the table against most things because of those flamers, unless you're running the long range melt gun equivalent. But yeah, the flamers have just been so good. They tear apart hordes. They actually do hit really hard on big things too, especially when, with, like I said, Mortarion around. Because Mortarion has an aura of reroll ones to hit for all Death Guard, and he has the Arch Contaminator Warlord trait, which is reroll all failed wounds with plague weapons on top of his minus one toughness aura. So most of the time you're wounding on threes with the majority of these weapons, or twos, and rerolling everything that you fail to hurt with.
God, okay. Any other standout units you want to share with us?
Well, of course, there's always Mortarion, but I think that that one's been driven into the ground by Bell of Lost Souls and everything like that.
Sure.
So, don't need that one too much. You'll also see they have Terminators in particular. They have two new sets of Terminators. There's the Deathshroud Terminators, which people have been talking great lengths about how you need them to protect Mortarion. In my opinion, they're way too expensive for that. They're the one unit in the Codex I don't think has a really good spot because they can't keep up with who they're trying to protect. They don't buff who they're trying to protect. They actually have a plus one attack for all characters except Mortarion. And people are just going to walk away from them. The Deathshroud Terminators are great in close combat. If you're within 6 inches, they're going to kill whatever they touch. But they move 4 inches, and when they advance, they have to die roll. They can teleport at least, but people are going to walk away if you don't get to them. Then you have the Blightlord Terminators that are basically like Chaos Terminators, but they're Toughness 5, Disgustingly Resilient. Those things are what you're going to see more so for Terminator-type Death Guard lists. Aside from that, you also have the Elite characters, such as the Belogus, Putrefier, the Plague Surgeon, Foul Blightspawn, and the Tallyman. Most of those guys I can only see being really, really useful in all infantry lists. And those are the infantry that are going to walk up the board. And I can also see them in character spam lists. As much as I hate character spam lists, when you have things like the Belogus Putrefier, he's the grenade monkey guy, I can see people suiciding them by getting into rhinos, charging up the field, getting out of the rhinos, charging in and exploding all over the place because they explode on a 4 and do mortal wounds to everything around them. So, unfortunately, you're probably going to see that too.
Something I noticed about the Terminators, all the new Terminator models in their rules are all cataphracty. So they're actually moving to the 30K.
Well, those are the Death Guard ones. They've always been cataphracty.
Yeah, but up until now, every time we've seen, you know, Chaos Terminators, they've all just been the 40K Space Marine Terminators with horns and spikes.
Yeah.
Now they're actually kind of addressing that they're wearing the cataphracty armor.
Yep. Yeah, I think the Tartarus armor is more so what the other ones are using. But yeah, it's definitely a thing.
Let's get into what we've seen in a lot of the other new codices, the stratagems and the warlord traits. So,
So, one of the stratagems that I like in particular is the Putrid Detonation, which is used when one of your Death Guard vehicles is destroyed. Do not roll a dice. The vehicle automatically explodes. That's one command point. And if any of you have been with a whole lot of units surrounding a rhino when it explodes, you realize it hurts. This stratagem guarantees that happens. If you don't want it to explode, you still have to roll a dice. You can't pay a point to not have it explode. These things just explode. Aside from that, there's the staples like the one in the Chaos Space Marine Codex. Veterans of Long War that allows you to add one to your wound during the shooting or fight phase for one Death Guard infantry unit, which is pretty good. If you run Poxwalkers a lot, there's the Deadwalk again, which is used at the beginning of your movement phase. Select a unit of Poxwalkers. Until the start of your next movement phase, replace that unit's its ability to, whenever it kills a dude in the fight phase, it generates an additional Poxwalker. So this one is each time an infantry model other than the Poxwalker, friend or foe, is slain within 7 inches of that unit, add one model to the unit. So you would have to combo that with one other stratagem in particular, which is the Cloud of Flies stratagem, so people don't just shoot at that unit. Cloud of Flies is Select a Death Guard infantry unit. Until the start of your next movement phase, enemy models can only shoot this unit if it is the nearest visible target. But I can definitely see someone trying to just build up a big blob of Poxwalkers utilizing the Dead Walk Again stratagem. Most of the other ones are nothing too crazy aside from you have your staple, take extra relics, and there's a Chaos Boon. And there's Kill Shot, of course, which is the Predator stratagem that if you haven't seen it yet, you're going to see it a lot because it is really good at popping anything big. It adds one to a Predator's to wound roll and adds one to all damage dealt by a Predator. So that's whether it's a Storm Bolter, a Hunter Killer Missile, a Heavy Bolter, a Predator Autocannon, a Havoc Launcher, whatever the heck it's shooting at you, so long as you are a monster or vehicle.
That sounds rather punishing. Now, you and Ray were telling me earlier there's a way to get command points back so you can spend more of these stratagems.
Correct. That is the Tallyman, who is one of the new characters, which I played with him a fair bit. Doesn't come up as much as I wanted to. But so long as your army is battle-forged and you have a Tallyman on the battlefield, so that means he's not in a Rhino, he's not in reserve for some odd reason. Anytime that you spend command points on a Death Guard stratagem, so it has to be Death Guard, it cannot be the command point reroll, can't be the interrupt, and it can't be the auto-pass morale. You roll 2d6 on any result that results in a 7, whatever command points that you just used get refunded to you. It's not all the command points that you've used previously in the game. It's only for that stratagem. So it's not as amazing as it could have been, but then again, that would have been amazing if it just ran command point spam.
Yeah, and again, if I did the math right, it works out to be roughly about the same as if you were to just roll on a 1d6 and just hope for a 6. It's roughly about the same.
Yeah, it's 16.666%, give or take.
So as I've been listening and watching some of the battle reports come across our Facebook group here and discussing things, one of the things that leaps out at me with this army is a lot of toughness 8, a lot of 3-up armor, followed by the 5-ups, disgusting resilience. So incredibly durable army. So compared to what has been described as a more lethal edition of 40K, in looking at the top 8s that we looked at from this particular week as well as previous weeks, where do Death Guard fall in terms of the matchups that are out there currently?
So Death Guard, as far as like durability, I think that they're actually one of the most durable armies, primarily because they have that 5-up Field of Pain. They're, generally speaking, higher toughness. They, generally speaking, have a decent armor save, unless you talk about Poxwalkers. And then those guys are just super cheap for having a Field of Pain. You have a whole bunch of defensive powers that help out a lot, like the +1 strength toughness power, the -1 to hit power, and then your stratagems also mess around with where people are even allowed to shoot. So that helps out quite a fair bit. But granted, if you let them get close to you, they will hurt you a lot. They're a mid-range firefight army. You can build them to be a close combat army, but they're so slow that I would not suggest that. The fastest movement on these guys, aside from Demon Princes and vehicles, is 5. So you're not going to get too far ahead. There are still models in here like the Chaos Lord, Sorcerer, and like the Predator that do not have Disgustingly Resilient. They're just copy-paste versions of what they were in the Chaos Codex. Those guys, while being great at buffing things, are not going to be anywhere near as durable as the actual Death Guard type stuff.
What do you think is the one matchup you're most worried about if you're playing Death Guard?
Currently, it's probably Malefic Lord spam, but that needs to be fixed anyways. I could definitely see Flyer spam also being an issue, primarily just because I have a lot of stuff that likes to shoot hitting on 4s already. I like for it to not hit on 5s or 6s, but that could be pretty strong. I've already come across, like I say, in the Magnus Titans, things like that, and it felt unfair against the Titan player. It just, they hit so hard with all the rerolls, it's ridiculous. Granted, that was a majorly tanky, tank list with Mortarion helping him out. And I've also played against Space Marines, Dark Angels in particular, with Azrael, and even they couldn't handle all the durability and return fire that was being put out. They're really good against MSU, primarily with Mortarion, because once he gets close, that aura pulse of mortal wounds and the minus one toughness are just absolutely brutal on those MSU things that like to stay clumped up for buffs. So there's not a whole lot that actually Death Guard players need to really worry about, because if you get close, you have a bunch of flamers. If they are far away, you have the ability to shoot like these poison battle cannons that are so insane with a arc contaminator around that they delete whatever they look at. It's just a perfectly well-rounded codex. I can't imagine, I mean, aside you don't have flyers, like actual true flyers. They're so good.
Yeah, I did notice Heldrick's not included, Mauler Fiends, Forge Fiends, but it seems like some of the new models kind of take the same role and stay closer to the background and the lore of the Death Guard.
Yeah, there are definitely no Death Guard bikers, so you don't have to worry about the T6 Feel No Pain bikers that never die. Now you just have to worry about the T5 Feel No Pain infantry that never die.
Fair enough. So looking at how they play, you mentioned a mid-range. So looking, focusing on ITC missions, since we talked mostly ITC tournaments, that mission set, take center field and lock it down and deny Maelstrom, or what's the general strategy for a Death Guard at this point?
That's probably going to be where it's at, is they're going to set up shop in the middle of the field. It might take them a turn or two to get there, but they'll set up shop in the middle of the field, and unless you table them, you're not taking it back from them. Even Khorne Berserkers, I don't think, can chew through enough before they all die. Yeah, they just... Khorne Berserkers die really fast to appropriate weapons, which the Death Guard have so many of. Primaris Marines can't chew through Death Guard faster than Death Guard can chew through them if Death Guard get within that wonderful little range. So they're going to be able to grab objectives, sit on objectives for longer than probably anything else you can imagine for the same points cost.
Been mulling over the Warlord traits. Don, what do you think is the go-to Warlord trait for this, for the Death Guard?
It's Mortarion's Warlord trait. Even if you don't use Mortarion, all the plague weapons just demand that you take Arc Contaminator. The reroll all fail to wounds with all plague weapons within 7 inches of that character is too good to pass up. There's a whole lot of ones that are great, but that one just screams, take me, please.
Okay. None of these look really that bad, actually, though.
Nah, everything in it's great. The biggest reason why I'm saying that they're so good at the mid-range firefight as well is that their rapid fire range is 18 inches instead of 12.
That's right.
And then they also have the ability that when they move with heavy weapons, which means that they're moving up the board at you, they don't suffer a penalty to shoot with it. They don't have a minus one for moving. And if they advance with assault weapons, which they do have a fair amount of, like the Blight Launchers, they don't care about it. They just move further and shoot normally. So those are all really, really good.
Which rule is that that gives them that?
So it's the inexorable advance. It's on page 96 of the actual codex, right next to the Warlord traits. You do have to be Battleforged, though, so don't bring a unbound army.
That's where that comes in. I remember hearing about that, but I didn't see it on the pages for the rules in like the profiles, so I didn't know where they were.
Yeah, they're kind of hidden there. Yeah, they're right next to the Waller traits. And then, of course, you have like the relics. There's only one relic that people should ever take, which is the Super Inning Plate. The Pandemic Staff is not bad if you're running Smite Spam. Otherwise, Super Inning Plate is the go-to for anything that you have the ability to get into close combat.
No kidding.
It's just every time you make a save at the fight subphase, on a dice roll of 4+, you deal mortal wound to that unit. It's impossible not to see how that's the auto-include.
Any other closing thoughts on the Death Guard at this point?
I do definitely think that you will see Death Guard out en masse within the next couple months from people finally getting the armies built. There are many ways that you can play correctly as Death Guard. That's one of the things I love about the Codex. You can build heavy infantry, you can build heavy tanks, you can build even a Terminator drop force is not going to be bad at all. They're fairly durable, fairly slow, but you have to go shooty Now, the Blight Lord Terminators are the way to go. The Death Shrouds are just too slow for what they do. But you're also going to run into those people that want to run, you know, 18 Death Shroud Terminators that are really expensive and too slow to hold up their part of the board. One other thing to note is that this Death Guard Codex has a lot of demons in it from the actual demons codex, like Nurglings, Plague Bearers, Plague Drones, and those types of things. They do not have the Death Guard keyword. If you put them in a Death Guard detachment, it nulls the Death Guard detachment because they no longer have that Death Guard keyword as being the most common keyword. So just be very aware of that.
So when building your army, put all your demons in one detachment and put all your Death Guard in the second detachment.
Correct.
Okay. It's a good spot because if you could see somebody making that mistake, it all came from the same book. Don't all have the keyword. Okay.
Yeah.
Much as I hate to admit it, I am considering building a Death Guard army.
There's a fun army.
What's the model count like when you've been doing some test builds? It seems like they're high cost, another elite army again.
So you can definitely go with the cultist bricks. You can go with the Poxwalker bricks. I've been finding that those take a long time to play with, primarily because you're rolling dice, things aren't dying. And you might be re-rolling dice, like especially if the Plague Surgeon around, that allows Death Guard Infantry to reroll ones on disgustingly resilient. But I definitely found that the, generally speaking, having one or two squads of those screen units is much better than having an army of it. The Death Guard have such great elite units or heavy ordnance that you want to bring those big things with you because they will just destroy whatever they look at. Even Plague Marines with bolters and a couple like Blight Launchers or whatever other gun you want to give them are really good at blowing things apart.
All right. Well, thank you, Don, for that review and breaking that down for us. We'll be anxiously looking over the next few months and see how Death Guard does shake up the meta, as well as the second release for this month, which will be Cult Mechanicus coming out next week. So we'll have to take a look at that in greater detail as well. But thanks again for your expertise. Appreciate you having on the show.
Thank you.
All right, now we're at the point of the show. Let's go over the ITC top 10 as they are currently ranked as of this recording. And good news is, unlike last week's show, the Nova Open results have been tabulated into the top 10, as well as several events we talked about earlier in the show. So let's get to it, the top 10. So in 10th place in the ITC, Andrew Ford hanging out there at 579 points, roughly about 57 points off the pace for first place. In 9th place, Brandon Grant with Imperial Guard. He's about 50 points off the pace. 8th place, Tyler DeVries. Great showing over the last 2 weeks. Moved up. It's a sizable lead over Brandon Grant now at 595 points and roughly about 42 points out of first place. Just a sliver ahead of him is Aaron Along at 598 points. And just inches above that, less than a point ahead, is our number one from 4 weeks ago, Paul McElvey, has fallen down to sixth place over the last few weeks. In fifth place, our sister's player of great renown, Adrian Gennard, at 608 points, so he's only 29 points off the lead pace. In fourth place, Ian Andrews at 612 points. Just a sliver ahead of Ian is Sam Henlick with 615 points. Immersed solidly in second place is Andrew Gautneau with 633 points. And with 4-point lead over his fellow ETC Team America teammate, Nick Natavati is currently your number one ITC player with 637 points. All top 10 players have 5 events at this point, so there are maxed out scores at this particular juncture. So a lot of movement since last week.
Oh, yeah.
That's good to see, though. One of the things I've been noticing is that it doesn't seem like a whole lot of players are just going out and crushing every single tournament they come across. There's a lot of people that are pushing up to those first-ranked spots for these events, but it seems to be unique at every single one. So I'm actually really excited to see that.
We're seeing a lot of, and it's also interesting, different locales, different parts of the country being represented here in the top 10. I think in the past, ITC was always considered a West Coast tournament circuit. Is definitely seen it on a nationwide type circuit. Probably not as much as the Northeast that we'd like. But, you know, Nick, as well as Andrew Gagneau, leading the East Coast charge there. So good to see that. So interesting top 10. So looking ahead to next week, we saw that there was only one GT on the schedule. And the good news is, it's one we're running. Yay! So, Don, I want to talk about the event coming up this weekend.
All right. So it's a... It's a GT down in Glendale, Arizona, and it's going to be 5 rounds, 2,000 points. We are trying to stay as close as we can to the ITC's updates as far as how they're doing with their events. So we're using the 31-plus power, or sorry, over 31 power level pan, but I'm also trying to use the GW's kind of hybrid into there. So I'm making it so that all, like, Warlord traits, Psychic Powers, whatnot, are part of the list building. So you will not be selecting anything new, aside from relics, with command points and whatnot, before any game begins. So we'll see how that actually works out. It's more of a test run, per se. But we're definitely looking forward to it. We're having quite a few of the West Coast fellas coming out. Actually, a lot of the frontline guys are coming out, too. But, yeah, we'll see how that all works out.
One thing that's been consistent with our events, not only have they been growing steadily and been well received, but the local crowd has been almost outnumbered 2-1 by the out-of-town players. So good to see that people make the trip to see our tournaments.
All right, well, that's the only GT we've got this weekend. I did want to point out that next weekend is the Iron Halo in Oklahoma. So if anybody plans on trying to get out to that, I don't know if it's sold out, but... probably start making plans.
It's an also a solid event, so I'd love to hear the updates from there. One thing going back to our tournament for a quick one thing with that we've been talking about for several weeks is our local meta does not mirror the national meta that we talk about on this show. And it's one of those things where I kind of hear what we talk about and do all this research for the show, and I'm like, I'm going to build my army to do that. And I show up at one of our local events and run into something completely different. So interesting, we've got so many out-of-towners coming to this tournament. You got an interesting mixing pot of metas coming together for this tournament. What armies do you expect to see, and who do you think is going to come out on top this weekend?
So I definitely think that we'll see things from character spam to whether it's like Celestine will be all over the place, I'm sure. But there's going to be a lot of different armies there. I know just from our own meta in particular, it's going to be everything from, like, I'm running Death Guard to we have a guy that runs Magnus and Titans. We have another guy that runs Cult Mechanicus, which we are allowing that codex. It's coming out that day, so that'll be interesting to see how that works out. Hopefully there aren't too many rules issues that pop up. But it'll
looking
definitely
forward to that. Thanks.
Very fun. That's what we have you there for. But, yeah, it's literally everything under the sun that we've seen down here, but it has definitely been different. We haven't seen a whole lot of conscript spam. Oh, we have seen Malefic Lords. Unfortunately, I hate those things. They need to be fixed, like now. but for the most part, it's one of the things I've hardly ever heard anything bad about the events that we have down there. People seem to all like it. We have people coming up from whether it's Utah, California, Texas, we have a very large competitive group going there, so it should be a lot of fun.
Look forward to it. Get to show off some new terrain that I've been working on, so I'm excited to do that. We follow a lot of the same standards from the Nova Open, just simply resized and reportioned everything to match closer to the ITC terrain kits. So very strong competitive event. Looking forward to the well run. Got to thank Darren and the staff there from Imperial Outpost Games. They make it very easy to run events there. So I want to thank them again for their undying support to let Don and I run events that we like to run. So it's very handy. Any closing thoughts for the show, gentlemen?
I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how Death Guard do in the near future. That's my own bias. I'm also very curious to see how Cult Mechanicus shake things up. Because that's a very, very heavy shooting army. Out of all the armies so far, I think it's probably the heaviest as far as range damage output. it even goes above Space Marines, in my opinion. I just want to see how that affects things like conscripts. When you have things like the robots that fire so many shots that they just clear screens away in one turn. I'm super anxious to see how that stuff comes out.
So we'll have in-depth report. Ray, any other thoughts?
I'm excited to see what these next couple codexes have for us.
Do we know what order they're coming out? We know which three are coming out after AdMech, but they have never told us exactly what's next, correct?
The last rumor that I heard was after these two, the Death Guard, Cult Mechanicus, it's Tyranids, then Igard, then Craftworld LR.
Okay.
That was the last rumor I heard.
Well, that was announced at NOAA by GW, so yeah, I just don't know what if it's in that order or not, so be curious to see as they come out. As always, you can count on us for coverage of each of those releases. So thanks again for listening. Look for us. The Rise of the Primarch is the name of the event this weekend. You can find it under the Best Coast Pairing, so tickets are still available, but we are limiting it to 46 players, so make sure you sign up early, and look forward to seeing you there this weekend. Until our next show, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
Don, thanks again for being our guest on the show. Huge help with all your insight, and we'll talk to you guys.